Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show, April 25, 2009. Tonight is a lovely little ditty I think you're going to really like. And let's just see where Dr. Fred is at right now.
Forum on New Science. This afternoon's speaker and workshop is Dr. Fred Bell. Building a powerful immune system and raising consciousness via DNA modification and cellular transition. Fred Bell, a holistic medical doctor, began his career as a scientist at the early age of 9, working with his father at the University of Michigan, researching atomic energy. An author, musician, former physicist, and NASA engineer, part of the Saturn and Apollo lunar missions, Fred Bell is today an internationally known contactee and speaker on preventive medicine and Pleiadian science. His book, The Promise, co-authored by Brad Steiger, is now released in Europe, Japan, and the U.S. Death of Ignorance and his 18-hour educational tape series are also fundamental works. Soon to be released will be his new book, The Secret Promise. Welcome, Dr. Fred Bell.
Thank you. Okay, now you had a question.
Well, one of the things I wanted to find out something about if I can.
Yeah.
Is the hormone that the brain produces when you have heart condition.
Yeah.
Some people just ask questions before you even start. Serotonin. That's what I call an aggressive audience.
How to reverse that too, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. And then you?
Yes. What do you know about the political economic organization of the Pleiadians and so on?
Oh, quite a bit. Yeah.
Could you give us some idea of how they're...
Yeah, I'll try to interface that. Yeah, sure, I'd love to. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm also interested in that question, and also what are the fundamental intentions of the Pleiadians at this point?
Okay. All right. You know, I'll just start off with that, actually, about a little bit about the Pleiadians. They started... their system is older than ours. And but I just leave that open because people will probably be wandering in all along. Their system is older than ours, and although we have been inhabited here on this earth for well over 1 million years, I mean, you know, when they dig up a geode that's 1 million years old and find a motor in it, you know, that tells you something, right? But way back when, as George Lucas would say, a long time ago, the Pleiadians started to use propulsion systems similar to ones we use here and develop space travel. But the difference between their development and ours was that they have a bunch of stars that are within a light year or two apiece. Like for an era where Semyasi's from, when the sun comes up, there's two suns that come up, a big bright one and a lesser bright one. So they developed propulsion systems very early in the game as far as humanoid type races go. And very soon, when they developed their propulsion systems, they came in contact with a group from Lyria called Lyrians. Okay, and what's really interesting, because I got into this, I'm getting into this now in chapter 40 of The Secret Promise, a new book I'm writing about anti-gravity and propulsion systems. There's two types of ways of getting things off the ground. Okay, one is called electrogravity, which is what's called a block wall effect. And the other is called anti-gravity, which has nothing, doesn't even take into consideration where the ship is. When you deal with, for example, the block wall ships like the Reticulan ships, some of the more crude, a lot of the AVRO ships from Area 51, those ships fly off of grids based on the round off the equator and then zigzag all over hell and back. So as a result, the stability of these ships is they're very unstable when they're close to the ground, and they're limited to where they can land and come down safely and not lose control. When you start getting away from the planet's surface, the grid systems start to fuse as one. They start to pick up speed and stability, and as a result, it's easier for those type of propulsion systems to work. You get into the Lyrians and the more advanced Pleiadian propulsion systems, and they use what's true anti-gravity, not electrogravity, but true anti-gravity. And I don't have the... For me to remember all the stuff, Semyasi has been sitting there dictating to me word by word. I should have brought my time travel disclosure down here because it's really interesting. But word for word, how to phrase all this so you'd understand it. basically, gravity is created by the aura of the Logos. Okay, and that's what gravity really is. And it reaches down through seven planes. Whereas electromagnetism and magnetism is only a product of the physical plane. It has nothing to do with the astral plane. Okay? Then when you get up into understanding the astral plane, which is a very real space like it would be here, everything is happening there instantaneously, so they don't have any speed of light. It doesn't mean anything. If you don't have any speed of light, you don't have any space. So if you don't have any space, then you can go anywhere you want instantaneously with the right motives. So when you start looking at these different cultures, they start presenting you very different ways to build a mousetrap. Okay, there's many ways to build a mousetrap, and some are, you know, mousetraps that just dematerialize the mouse, and others trap them and hold them there. It comes down to that. The cultures of these different worlds, they're all real interesting. All of the higher cultures, the Andromedan, Larian, Pleiadian cultures, are based on what I would call the structure of the archetype, okay? They're archetypal structures. That's how their cultures are done. And what that means is that we are all part of a greater being, okay? The greatest being of all would be a logos, okay? You'd have a planetary logos. A planetary logos would be a being who, on a higher plane of consciousness, the solar system forms all of his chakras, all of his organs, you know? Like Saturn could be a solar plexus, for example, in energy, okay? And that's the logoic concept that they all use, and every one of them uses it. The lower structures, the reptilians, the grays, and all these lower frequency negative extraterrestrial races, they're based only on what's called the oversoul principle. The oversoul principle is a principle that they don't have an individual soul, and they have to work towards gravitating through the work on the physical plane a constitution that will someday have an individual soul. Okay? That's where you get, and that's what, when you start learning about that, you start learning about geometry. And the secret promise, geometry and the shape of things is very, very important. Okay? For example, if you are to look at, everybody knows what we're made up of now. You guys have all heard me speaking of. What are we made up of? Four things. What are we? You got to learn your constitution real well. Okay, we're made up of oxygen, right? And what does oxygen do? It animates the form so that the form can live here on Earth. Okay? Oxygen gives off what? Carbon dioxide. The Earth breathes carbon dioxide, gives off oxygen. We're animating the form. That's what oxygen does. Okay? Second, we have hydrogen. What does hydrogen do? Hydrogen is your consciousness. Hydrogen is your energy. Okay? Energy comes from consciousness. Nowhere else. Okay? So we're oxygen, hydrogen. And then nitrogen, right? We're nitrogen. What does nitrogen do? Builds the form, okay? It builds the form. And what does carbon do? Shapes the form. That's the secret. That is the secret. That's why the book is called The Secret Promise. You have no idea what is in this book until you read it. And I had people buy this thing, you know, and they want me to finish it up, and I'll get into a chapter because I'm down in the last chapter now. And all of a sudden, Sannyasi will say, okay, you're not clear enough to write what you're supposed to write. So I have to go clean up my act for a few. You know, if somebody's bugging you to pay a bill or you're doing your tax returns and the things we do in daily life and working sales and making your company run, that takes out of a consciousness. And so you have to become strong in consciousness to deal with that, put that aside, and become clear so that they can talk inside your DNA. And if you don't maintain that, the book stops. Because they won't have one word in this book out of place. You have no idea what time it takes. 11 years. I can say I've been in prison for 11 years writing this book. I mean, it's been hell for me. And I'm not, and it's because it's not my book. It's something for the world. Okay? And so anyhow, form is very important. And in the book, and in my writings, in my teachings, in their teachings, you learn this stuff. It's like going to kindergarten, learning how to write, learning how to spell. And you put all this together. When you learn all the metaforms and all the things that are necessary, you can look at an Andromedan, you can look at a Lyrian, and you know something about them because of the science, because the science becomes universal. Now, let's look at the carbon atom just for a minute, okay? The carbon atom is an octahedron, okay? If I show this in the red blood cell structure, which is in one of my slides, I might as well just skip around on my slides. Well, not ready to skip around my slides yet. I will in a minute. Some of you guys have never been to my workshops before. Okay, right here would be a red blood cell, an octahedron. This is four. This is eight-sided, four all the way around. And this would repeat itself, okay, four times in the body. You'd have two alpha chains and two beta chains. Okay, that's blood, red blood cell, blood. This is the center of it. If I were to take this, okay, and put this over this, if this were grapefruit juice, this grapefruit juice would become sweet. Why was it bitter in the first place? Grapefruit juice shouldn't be bitter. The reason that grapefruit juice is bitter is because man has mismanaged his elements in his soil for so long that he's turned the soil into acid. And so what does the acid soil do? Produces an acid plant. When we study pH, we should be in an alkaline, not an acid. If I were to take and put this over here like that, it will change the taste, making it sweet. Okay? Or if I were to take my hands and breathe through my solar plexus, rub my hands together, feel the energy come out, and put them over that. You can try this at home. This will also turn the grapefruit juice, okay, into something sweet. Because I have used oxygen and my consciousness to animate this form. In our bodies, you know, what happens if you take blood out of your body? What happens to your brain? In seconds, it deteriorates, right? Why? Because your brain is not receiving consciousness. This shape, this is God's shape, the universal shape, Pleiades, Andromeda, anywhere you go, that is the shape that has seven levels of consciousness in it. I could say the first ray, second ray, I'll show you the levels of consciousness, but they're all in here, okay? They're all in here. Then there's an upside down version of it, and they're also in there, the opposites, the yin and the yang, okay? Now I want to show you something, how this works. Everybody in here, breathe in through your stomach, through your diaphragm, and rub your hands together. Okay? And rub your hands together. Okay? Pull your hands apart and feel that. And start feeling that. You're consciously now putting your pranic energy in your hands. And you feel the energy. It's like a tingling. Okay? A lot of people never do that before. You never become aware of this factor. Okay? Now, I'll come around. When I come around, take your hands from this to like this, and I'll put the pyramid over your hands, and you watch how the pyramid amplifies that effect. Okay? Interesting, huh? Yeah. Some will feel it a whole lot, and some will feel not as much. Okay? Why would somebody feel it more than others? Skin is the largest organ in your body. If your organs, your liver, kidney, spleen, and all that's working properly, your skin is going to be sensitive. If some of your organs in your body aren't working properly, your skin is insensitive. Turn them up. And you're not going to feel it as much. So you just need to change that part of your body around. If you get like me, you're oversensitive. I sense everything. When I was a kid growing up, before I became a contactee, I was very brazen. I was an Ivy League brat. I was raised as, you know, I was a very arrogant kid because I knew I was smart, which made me in life an idiot, but I thought I was smart. So I had to destroy myself basically at one point. Tibetans came into my life and destroyed my ego. They decimated it. And then the Pleiadians came along. But when I was younger, I had no sensitivity. You could have held a blowtorch on my hands. I wouldn't have felt it. You know, I was so insensitive. And I was very sick. I was born with polio. I had every kind of damn pneumonia every year in my life, practically, until I was about 20. So I became a doctor just to get my own body unscrewed around, because doctors gave up on me. They'd fix one thing with their damn medicines and something else would break. Okay. You wonder why you wear one of these on the head. Well, you wear one of these on your head, you'll never take it off. changes your entire DNA around. So now everybody felt that, right? Okay. Octahedron. Now, if I were to go get me a gray, you know, and take his blood out, it'd be magnesium. Instead of having an iron atom, this is an iron atom in our red blood cell, carrying consciousness through the body. If it was a gray, it'd be a three-sided pyramid. Okay? Three-sided pyramid doesn't ground consciousness to the lower planes. Okay? Meaning that you don't have a soul. So things that have three-sided pyramids in their circulatory structures are not grounded and don't have souls. What's a good example is a plant. Plant has a magnesium atom in it. Okay? So plants have feeling and they have consciousness, but they're not conscious of consciousness. What separates the human from the animal kingdom is we're conscious of being conscious. We are conscious of consciousness. That's the only difference. Okay? Animals also work on an oversoul. However, when an animal leaves its form, the essence of what it was can oftentimes come back and be around the owner in another form of the person, because that animal is part of an oversoul that the soul is centered on. Okay? So when reptilians, for example, and grays come here to our world, they don't have souls. So they're constantly trying to abduct us, trying to do biochemical experiments on us, and have been trying to change their genetics around so that they can mix into our race, but that won't happen. Sannyasi, I asked her, what's the deal on a gray one day? And she says, imagine an insect with a billion years of evolution on it. And that's what a gray basically is. You know? It really is. It didn't work through the chain of consciousness. And so as a result, we have them. We have the reptilians. So they're a controlled group. They're very real. When you meet one someday, if you haven't already, you'll begin to understand. They have a whole different society. Their society is like the hive structure. Whereas the Pleiadian society is like ours. You know, you want to know about a culture, Pleiadian culture is very much like ours, except everybody's a millionaire. You know, I always had a philosophy that we don't have problems with money, we have problems in this world because of the lack of it. Okay. Now, what was really nice is Ted Turner the other day gave away $1 billion to the... Yeah. And I know he was back there in New York doing it at the United Nations building. I know he was directing his energy to Donald Trump. Let's see how much you can give away, you know? Donald Trump's still in his ego, so... The Pleiadian culture, the kid... you know about our Dalai... Everybody know who our Dalai Lama is here? You know? Our Dalai... Tenzin Gyatso is his name, but... He will get so old, and he'll tell his monks, okay, I'm going to leave my body now. I'll be incarnated somewhere else, and they'll come to this town. So about 7 or 8 years go by, and then they go out and they find this guy that identifies objects. Come on in. Everybody started a little late. He identifies objects. He starts knowing the monks. Okay, that ability to control your incarnating potential, we all have it. And it comes with a thing called continuity of consciousness. We all have it. But our society, our governmental structure, through religion, has tried to destroy that, take it away from us for control, divide and conquer. Okay, and that's been the problem with the Piscean Age, with all of the religious things, you know, is dividing and conquering. You take each religion, it has some pluses and it has some minuses. And it's too bad. You know, for example, a lot of people, you know, when you understand how the soul works, they talk about abortion, you know. I'm not for abortion. We should be a society strong enough to not have to disengage the soul as trying to reconnect with its parental energies. You know, aborting the child, the soul may come back again and try again, but we shouldn't have to be a society that's so tangled it has to go into a situation like that. We should learn to control our creative habits, you might say. The Pleiades, they do. Another thing about our society is that we have the wrong, you know, the birth and the death is completely backwards here, okay? We should have the funeral when the child is born, and we should have the party when somebody dies, okay? We got it backwards here. We should hand out the cigars with the death, okay? Because the child just arrives in hell, okay? Coming from heaven. And the person just left hell and is out of here, okay? And I'll give you an example of that. Okay, when the woman gets pregnant, right? When the woman gets pregnant, At a certain point, the soul that's incarnating starts hovering over that woman. Okay? That soul transfers its essence down through the placenta into the woman's bloodstream, and the woman's bloodstream starts to galvanize. You know, if you take iron and magnetize it and put it underneath a piece of paper and wiggle the paper, the magnetic filings are going to form the shape of the energy. It's the way the human works. This is iron. This is blood. When the fetus is first formed in the mother's stomach, the first thing that's formed is the brain, the spinal cord, a few nerves, and then the heart and the blood supply, and then the fingers. As soon as the fingers start to form, the soul, by the time the fingers are formed, the soul that's going to be the baby is already there around the mother, hovering along with the ten of angels. And what happens is the galvanic action coming through the mother and the baby starts to form fingerprints in the baby's hands. So that's why everybody has a set of different fingerprints. These are formed by the galvanic action of the soul through the iron, through the blood. That's how we have fingerprints. On the Pleiades, for example, when a mother gets pregnant, you know, first of all, they haven't worried about somebody. You know, like Sannyasi's husband. Sannyasi is about 345 years old now. She was like 334 or so. No, she's 355 now. So 20-some odd years ago when I met her, she was in her early 340s. She appeared to be about a 27-year-old. Okay, she had lost her husband about 10 years before she came to Earth. And I had contact with her in 71. Her contact started with Billy Meyer in 1975 in Switzerland. So her husband had been dead about 8 years. But she didn't tell me about it when I first had contact, but she told Billy for some reason. She told us different things about herself. Her husband had died on Pluto, where their mothership is, on some kind of an expedition there. And she mourned her husband's loss. I mean, we lose somebody, but she didn't mourn it in a way that she'd never find him again. She would never have a problem. She mourned the loss in the sentimentality that goes into the tradition of the relationship. They experience those kind of feelings. And if you piss one off, they're liable to slug you. I mean, they Pleiadians will fight amongst themselves. But they're not stupid enough to pull a knife or a gun and shoot each other. They know better than that. But they will let off their temper. They do have feelings in their society. So what happens is, when a Pleiadian leaves, dies, and it's coming back, what happens is, as the Pleiadian comes back into the mother's womb, is pregnant during pregnancy, but they don't have to take and look for the fingerprints. They have a mapping in a traditional, their historical record systems are thousands of years old, so they know who the child is, its biological parents, just like we know who the Dalai Lama is, before the child is even born. So when a child is born in a normal birth like we have, with no pain, and I've delivered three children myself, my own daughters, and the last child I delivered, the mother didn't even have any labor pains. She had one contraction, because I learned how to deliver kids and do prenatal and all that. And so when the child is born, the child is educated, very, very similar to Tibetans, and they go to school for about 125 years. In 125 years, they get an equivalent of 7 or 8 of our PhDs. In the early part of their schooling, they're taught about the belief system of God, and they believe in God through nature, by the way, the Pleiadians do, not through a deity. They believe that we are the deity, and that eventually we'll be the deity. Each individual will be expressing themselves as a deity should express themselves, because this is time is infinite in their imagination. But during at some point in the early part of the child's growth, it's taught, it's told you can now go out and find your biological parents. The biological parents of the previous incarnation probably already are notified that the child is here. You know, they probably know about it anyway. As the child gets the freedom to decide whether they want to go back and finish up any karma with the biological parents. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. So they give them freedom all the way through. When they get to be about 125 years old, they choose a profession. And the profession usually is service. About a quarter of the profession is service to the universe, meaning going out in spaceships. Or, you know, they have mostly water on their planet, growing plants. They have huge farms. They do something to keep themselves busy, and then they have a creative time. So they kind of divide their life up into four different patterns, okay? So that gives you a little bit of idea of their culture. Now we'll go more into the science itself. I get my. This is, so some of you know, this is the radar I worked on when I was at the 776 radar squadron at Point Arena Air Force Station, California. And this is the radar that brought down the ship, the Roswell ship, and all the different crashes in New Mexico, ANFPS 35. Now, getting into radiation, protecting yourself against radiation, this is a good point to bring it in. these radars had a problem, a serious problem, and they hurt a lot of people. They killed a lot of people. The people weren't told that they were being killed. They just had a tremendous wave of cancer flare up in the late 40s and early 50s in this country because of these things. One night, our radar set was sitting on a hill on Point Arena, California, and the other one was back here in Long Island or Montauk. Okay, the ocean is out here. This is a side view. We're looking down the coast of the United States. One night, we always, when we worked these radars, we had a DDS Form 332 that the scope dope operator filled out. In other words, the person that was running this thing, reading the images on the radar screen, he filled out that form. And he filled it out pretty much almost every night. Every night on this planet, while I was in the Air Force in that station, practically every night, several thousand ships would descend about, just at a range of 400 miles. They'd descend about 200 miles off our coast, Northern California. Several thousand ships, almost every night. This is back in would be 1959, 1960, 1958, 1961, those days, those 4 years. Here come the ships down, 200 miles off the coast, make a turn to the south and head down to Mexico and come in across Mexico. Now, how many of you are familiar with the huge, livid rage of sightings that constantly goes on in Mexico? Okay? You turn on the TV down there any day of the time, there's a ship flying over, you know. In the eclipse of the sun in 92, they almost had an invasion down there of ships down there in Mexico. But what do you hear on our American news? Nada. Nothing. Okay? So these ships have come down. Well, one night, we saw a ship going 60 miles an hour. Okay, that didn't fit the profile because this profile, we ignored it. They filled out their forms and they threw them out. So that's what they did. Every day they shredded the form. The damnest thing you ever saw, taxpayer money. Nine guys sitting in their rooms filling out these forms, get out the door and you shred them in a shredder. Didn't even save them, but they had to fill them out. I don't know. Let's explain that. But I saw it day in, day out. So 60 mile an hour blip. So we said, this is different. This ain't no several thousand mile an hour object. We can do something about this. So we at 2 o'clock in the morning out of Hamilton Air Force Base, which is down by Santa Rosa, California, we scramble up a bunch of jets to go out there because we were part of the SAC Strategic Air Command. So they send out some jets looking for what some big object going 60 miles an hour. Okay? But what do they find? Nothing. So then they come back, and on the way back off the ocean, the Highway 1 is like, I don't know if you ever drive it, but it's straight off cliffs, just winding down the road. And down on Highway 1, down by Jenner, which is just about where Santa Rosa, you turn inland there, was a Greyhound bus full of people coming down from Seattle or someplace at 4 o'clock in the morning in the bus. And we saw their bus on the ground going 60 miles an hour on the radar screen. So what happened was we had put 5 million watts of power on that bus because of what's called skip. You know how you ever notice, like in Colorado, we see it down in California, one day you see it's perfectly clear on this level and a bunch of smog and it's like this is line between the clarity or it's real clear and the stuff all of a sudden goes up there. That's temperature inversion. And when temperature inversion comes in, it ionically collects things and puts them on shelves and you see like shelves of stuff before it goes clear. That's what happened here and it reversed the energy back. So those people all got 5 megawatts of radiation minus the losses through the... But I guarantee you a million watts of power hit that bus to show up on the screen. Now, so what happens if you're here at home, living around here? Airplanes coming in, radar sitting over here, even at the old air base, landing radar, the ILS systems, all that stuff, you're getting radiation, okay? You get a lot of it. I'll cover about that more. I'm just showing you some of the dangers involved here. Yeah.
How far you can be away from an airport to not pick up a lot of X-ray?
It doesn't matter anymore. There's radiation all over this planet.
And
okay.
Then there's not higher concentrations closer to airports and power sites and that sort of thing?
Yeah, within most airports, the ILS system is real concentrated around 10 miles or so. I'm just going to get this thing up here where it'll infrared sense my little thing here. Should do it now. There it goes. This is when I was at NASA. I'm going to skip through this. This is when I worked with Wernher von Braun. I built this. This went to the moon. This was one part of the Saturn. We had a program called Space Medicine. That was real interesting. Okay, this right here is a CAT scan of one of the first Paul Benowitz cases. Paul Benowitz was the guy who did a lot of, he owned Thunder Corporation, and he was the one that blew the whistle on the government and one of the first people to get people realizing the grays. This lady and her daughter had been abducted, and she'd been implanted. There's one right here, and there's one right there. These are the kind of implants that Stephen Whitman had down in Texas when he did his shooting. You know, you got to read a CAT scan. That's what this is. Okay, those are CAT scans. Those two implants surgically can't be removed because they're holographically implanted in the first place. They have a process where they abduct you. Now, realizing that the gray doesn't have a soul, he has an oversoul. He works as a group consciousness, hive consciousness. You're sound asleep at night. You got a soul. You're grounded. Okay, so you're dreaming on the astral plane. Okay, you're dreaming where your dreams are and where your DNA and where your endocrine system is set up on the astral plane. You're sending a message out to that gray, and if your aura is not right, that gray is going to come in and abduct you in your sleep. And that's why when people have to be hypnotized, because all this takes place because they're asleep, because that's his physical plane. The gray's consciousness physical plane is your astral plane. Okay, so that when you understand that concept from this shape alone of the molecules, you begin to understand it. Now this ship will be in my book. This is called an AVRO ship. What, changing?
End of side one.
Okay.
We're going to go ahead and switcheroo here. That was pretty good. That was real good. Yeah. We're going to switcheroo. This is a good one. I remember this old lady. This is a hot lecture. Yeah, this was a good one. So now we're going to get this puppy cranked up going the other way. And we'll finish this puppy off with some real good statistics.
Got it?
There it goes.
The AVRO is an advanced alien
advanced spaceship
vehicle.
Baby.
That's what this is. Okay, I've got the explanation of how it works in that in my book. One of my friends flew this thing. Actually, he's an associate. The people that fly those, I don't really want to know him that well. You know, this guy works for the government. But he was telling me about it, and he said that, you know, the Navy SEALs have a suit. You breathe a what's called a fluorocarbon. You might have seen in Popular Science one time on the cover, there's a little rat running around in the bottom of an aquarium full of liquid. Well, you breathe this thing in, this liquid in, and the Navy SEAL can dive down to 2,000 or 3,000 feet because he's breathing a liquid and he's getting his oxygen from that. It's like when you put the suit on, it's like you're drowning. But this is a zero-G suit, which they developed for these ships. So not only do you have this mask on and this thing in the back, but you're in a liquid suit too. Because this particular ship is called an electrogravity ship. And electrogravity ships don't have the mechanisms inside to prevent any kind of damage to your body when they make a very high angle, quick, you know, right angle turn. Okay, these have the structural capability of this ship here is 33 G's. So if you weighed 100 pounds, 33 G's, you'd weigh 3,300 pounds. Okay, in this ship. So you have to have this liquid in your lungs to keep your lungs from crushing during acceleration and deacceleration through turns. And to have liquid around your body so your bones don't break. Okay, just so you understand where the technology is. Okay, this is a drawing of how it works. Basically, it's got a accelerating core in the center, a plutonium core that creates electricity, that then powers electrogravity grids, and it's got oxygen down below from the breathe. Two people sit in it. That's the control panel right there.
Plutonium core.
Yeah. Oh, they've been flying plutonium. The Delta Craft ship that we've been flying since the 60s are all... That's how Paul Benowitz got that girl into that CAT scan. It was all over a crashed ship up at Dulce. One of the big ships went down. It was in 1981. A Delta ship went down. They look like a triangle, a flying triangle. There's a lot of them in England. You see a lot of them in England. Those are American-built Delta bombers. They're 40 feet long, and they're black. And sometimes they're escorted with gray ships, helicopters. Well, one of them crashed. The first thing they did is they put a big net over it, okay? And they crashed on an Indian reservation, the Jicarillas. And the Jicarillas are my friends. They're the last original Apaches left. And their water, that plutonium, ran out of that ship down into their little river. And they have seven lakes. And the Jicarillas make their money off of, they don't have gambling up there. They make their money by fishing. They have, you know, it's in Dulce, New Mexico. You can go down there and you'll meet the people that own the place, and the Indians, they'll take you fishing. But they won't take you fishing now because they killed all their damn fish in all the streams. You know, it was kind of sad. Yeah.
What does the American government do with those big triangular shapes?
Well, the ones that crash, they haul it out of there.
Yeah, what's the point of it? What do they do with them usually? That's what was over Phoenix just a little while.
No, those big delta, those, I think the ones over Phoenix were some aliens, those grays. The grays are getting real rowdy now. You know, people are starting to, the grays didn't want anybody to believe they were here. They had this, the CIA and the grays had this huge disinformation thing, but it's falling apart. I mean, the government is starting to get in the fishbowl. You never saw a happier person when I saw the IRS hearings on CNN 2 weeks ago. Yeah, it's finally, people are going to be humans again a little bit. This is a ship that I was working on, but we never finished. The government just confiscated the thing. This is over in Arizona several years ago. I got into building this stuff. And there's a person right there. That's how big it was. You know, we got into building these things. We have the X1 technology. This is in my new book. This technology, we have it now. We're using it in a slower form. We have a big device, which I'll show you further down here, called a radiator column, and we do a lot of work with scalar waves. Okay, this is a scalar wave device here. It works on many different levels, and what a scalar wave does, it's timeless and it's frequencyless. If you block the scalar wave in one of its zones, it can either become a weapon like Tesla's destructive beam, or it can be healing depending on what you do with a scalar wave. And a scalar wave unleashes this fourth dimensional energy I was talking about to the physical plane, opening doorways to eight different side continuums. Across any point in time will be eight side continuums, meaning that there are eight parallel universes at any point in time. And I talk about this, and the way I explain it in my book is through orbital patterns. Okay? If you go right to the hydrogen atom, everything you can explain right to the hydrogen atom, and you get into a hydrogen atom, and you start studying any atom, here's the nucleus, and here's the electron flow. Okay? And electrons don't go around an atom like Mr. Universe, Mr. Solar System. You know how in school, here's the proton, here's the electron. Oh, look, it's just like the moon going around the Earth. It doesn't work that way. It does not even work that way. What it does is it moves around in a cloud. Okay? And consciousness changes the density of the cloud. The cloud could be, this electron could be sped up, slowed down, this cloud gets thick or thin. You can talk to this and it'll waver back, like Stephen Greer's talking about communication with his ships. Same phenomenon, okay? It's a cloud. And if it's got two little arms like that, it's a P orbital, and if you start putting a few more arms on it, it becomes an F orbital. And if you start playing around with it, it'll develop like a toroidal shape here and here. And then imagine if you have it right up here in the most complicated form. You got one coming up here, and you got one of these wings going back there. You've just created, in the electron form, in a hydrogen atom, quantum mechanics, a model of reality in space and time. And so as a result, you end up seeing this model with eight different side continuums. And so, for example, how do you think we would go into time? If we were going to go into time, how would we do that? Very simple. We just take our atomic structure as we know it is and create a Mobius form out of it. In other words, we would take our P orbitals in our body and put them into a Mobius form and turn them into light. And then we have seven levels of consciousness, each level having its own time, and all you have to do is identify with that level, and then you're there. If you want to go into the future, you accelerate it because you need acceleration. Well, I'm just drawing it here. There's one, two, three, four, and then there's one, two, there's four more that go on the thing. It represents a model of a dimension, exactly. A side continuum, not a dimension. Side continuum. Okay, dimension. Okay, what is a dimension? Okay, a dimension is an area of time that's correlated to that area. Okay, a side continuum is made up of dimensions that has time not correlated but related, interrelated to a dimension. In other words, dimensions related, interrelated, but not individualized. That's a side continuum. Okay, which would be a parallel universe. Okay, a level of consciousness is where all of this comes from. It's entirely different. I'll show you what a level of consciousness is. In my book, I've defined it a lot better. I'm not physically clear enough to explain it to you the way you want to hear it, because I'm not in perfect state as I was when I wrote that book. Okay, but I'm explaining to you now roughly how it goes. Yeah. Now, with this thing here, now when you do healing on yourself, when you're doing healing on yourself, first thing you got to do is realize that this isn't going to heal you, that's not going to heal you, this isn't going to heal you. You're going to heal yourself. That's the first cardinal rule. And a lot of people don't get that. Okay? They don't get that. Second rule in healing, you can realize that things like this, created bad or good, can cause you to have problems. Okay? For example, when I was working with pregnant women, getting them to have zero labor pains, the first thing I have to do with a woman is teach her that birth is not pain. Because mass mind has made a thought form and sent it out through every damn hospital and every orthodox doctor that pain is birth. And birth is ecstasy. So you have to unprogram the DNA. That's the first step, okay? This device here, let's say you have a cut, a big slice in your hand. This device here, when you subject your hand to it, the cut it overcomes healing. It allows you to heal the cut yourself without the passage of time. In other words, instantaneously the cut goes away. Remember the day the earth stood still? The guy took his propulsion system out, and when he got shot, Klaatu, you know, he got shot by this guy, and so the robot, Klaatu, carries him in and sets him down, and he puts him in the propulsion system, and he heals himself instantaneously with it.
Oh, is this an alien device?
Yeah, this is alien. This is Pleiadian. Pleiadian device. Huh? Oh, I know how it works. I've built one once. Look, you basically, just to give you a quick explanation of it, is what you do is this right here is a Corellian camera and it's a computer. These tubes, all this is in my book, these are ray tubes. It's coherent light, that's coherent radiation of all forms. And it's also sound. We use multi-timbral sound. Everything that I do involves sound and light mixed together, okay? Sound is very important. If you go down to my little booth down there, you'll hear some music being played, okay? We take sound, we put it into transducers, we lift things. We demonstrate that. I in New York, you were there, did you come to my opening concert where I played that sound? Yeah, I played a levitating sound in the concert. I worked with the Moody Blues 15 years. I worked with a lot of big bands with sound. Well, that's a good word for it. They're multitimbral sounds. They come from the Pleiades. The sitar would be an instrument of multitimbral sound. Timbre meaning the difference of the tonal qualities between a piano and a flute, for example. And what we did is we recorded the ships live, and then we put them into the D50 command program, and we used a linear arithmetic synthesizer, and we manufactured in a laboratory the exact sounds the Pleiadian ships have, and I put them into a musical form. And in New York City, I used the Ross form that levitates things to open a concert for Stephen Halpern and Paul Horn and all them and get awards and stuff. I was the opening act. So I'm a rock and roller, let me tell you. So these sounds come out of here, okay? You know, sound pollution is one of the big worst things that we have in our society. It's a negative electrical precursing energy. And we're talking about negative EPCs. Remember I told you earlier, we have a biochemical body, an electrical body, and then an electrical precursing body, EPC body, right? That's a very important body. Sound is a big thing. Universe, you know, when you go to consciousness, you go right to the source of creation, okay? You can imagine a black void. I do a meditation with this. You just imagine a black void. That black void is called pralaya by the Tibetans, or the influte. This is before the Big Bang, okay? Just before the Big Bang, okay? Black void, okay? Then, all of a sudden, inside the black void, before the Big Bang, is a white light, okay? A white light suddenly appears in finite time. I mean, no time, but appears everywhere out of nowhere. And this white light is called the Logos. It's the Logoic plane. It's the Logos. It's the primal form of creation. Within that white light are seven vibratory frequencies. As soon as we have the white light, we automatically have the 1, the 3, the 7, and those 7 vibratory frequencies go to 7 different organs in your body, okay? You are a synthesis of creation. When you and also an antithesis of creation. So what we're doing here, for example, is we turn on red. You're sitting in a chair looking at that thing, and you're hearing A, and you're hearing red. And you're looking at that, and maybe you're colorblind. And so you think you're seeing orange. We got an orange beam down here, but we're putting red on. We don't care what your ego thinks you're seeing. We know what you're getting. So down in here, you got your hand. We got a scanning camera, a camera that scans like Korean photography of that sort. And so we can see everything from the eyes, every organ in your body, or the hydrogen atom, proton, electron. We have just scanned red, first course of that frequency. Then we go to the center course, which is green. We turn on green. You see green, you might be thinking that you're in blue. We don't care what you think. We put on the musical note C that correlates to that. Boom. Now we scan green. Okay? We're looking at the thyroid. Here we're looking at the pineal pituitary gland. We're looking at everything. And then, so now we're looking at the central frequency of the hydrogen atom, which is green, which never shifts, by the way. It's always consistent, like nature. And then we put violet on, and now we're scanning the electron flow. So we've got a whole map of your body and the universe within your body. Yeah.
When you say green correlates to the musical note C,
yeah.
Is that C calibrated to A440?
Yeah. It totally is, yeah. Yeah, the same diatonic scale that we're used to. But it's A, B, C, D, E, F, G. It's very simple when you really work with it that way. I've seen people try to mix it up and change it around. Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. It doesn't work. It's A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And we start getting into microtones. Another thing about the sound, and I started explaining that at the same time as explaining this. When creation started, first came the light, okay? But that's not material form. When planets started, from when the Big Bang went off, then came the sound. So the Big Bang is Aum, and the Big Bang is sound. Sound starts way down. Pleiadian ships are sound-powered and light-separated. Semyasi told me to find that in the very beginning of our... She says, you won't understand that now, but remember this. They're sound-powered and light-separated. In life, I've learned to know what that means. So, for example, you're used to hearing negative EPCs, sirens, crowd noise, the sound of that fan, the sound of that slide projector, buzzing of a 60-cycle light when it goes bad. These are bad sounds, and what they do is they destroy your DNA. And I'll show you that. If you guys don't fade out on me, I'll show you how they destroy your DNA. And so that shortens your life. So what happens when we use these multi-timbral sounds, like that I use in my music down there, it pulls all this stuff out. Now, if you get the Fellowship album, which is the first album I ever did. Now, I went into a laboratory. I mean, I had my own sound studio. And I went into a studio, my own studio, on an 8-track, made my own album. Okay? Whole 90-minute rock opera. I used a Pleiadian ship. I used everything I knew how to do as a creator, as a musician. And then I finished this album. Guess who bought the album first? John Anderson from Yes, the Moody Blues. All the big musicians, Elton John, get my album. And so you go to their house, and they're creating their music. Listen to mine. Now, my music never made it mainstream. I mean, it never made it to Tower. The only stuff I ever made at Tower Records with is stuff I did with Stephen Halpern, an album there. But otherwise, we always sold it. But my music went to the right places because of what's in it, you know. When you hear that album, you first might not like it. You might like it, you might not like it. Because there's so much negative DNA stuff in your that you from the crowd, and that will some of those things will pierce your some of those sounds will pierce your ears and you can't handle it. And some of it you'll like. You'll have a whole attitude when you hear that album. Believe me.
That's exactly what happened to me. The
really? Yeah. You have a whole attitude like. But what happens? You play it again, and you got to hear it again, right? And then again, and then it starts to talk to you. And then pretty soon, you know, that album I did in 87, I still have to hear it once in a while. I have to hear it fanatically like I first did, but, you know, it's just so funny. And then Elton John's producer, David Tickle, who produces U2, the big producer, he loves it. He plays it all the time. Matter of fact, he's involved with me in some stuff now. So anyway, the person gets in this tub, and let's say that they saw orange here and they saw blue here. We put this ray down into this person, and then it changes their entire structure around, their genetic structure around, and then the problems and deficiencies in the body. Well, we use a acid alkaline pH solution, yeah. Yeah, to ground it. Oh, yeah, because we're electrolyzing your entire body with this technology. It's not just... This is a diagram of a ship engine, a Pleiadian ship engine of a Variation 3 craft. Variation 3 craft, what does it do? Okay, this is the engine. What it does is, this is called a gather lens up here. Okay, if you look at the lens, this is all in my book, by the way, so you don't have to. So it's a cool book. You know? I'm telling you right now. Worked a long time on this damn book. It's a gather lens. It's frozen on me here. Let me get another one of these out. These things have a tendency to dry out if you don't put the lids on them. The top is a gather lens. Remember what I said at the very beginning? How they developed their technology? Okay. See, there's another lens up here. That's a capture lens. See how on the top? Another lens down here. So if you're looking at it, you see this lens up here, and this bigger lens is down here. So this capture, the gather lens gathers energy here, and then it captures it and throws it down through this column. When they first started developing interstellar space drive on the Pleiades, many years, who knows when, as George Lucas says, a long time ago, they took pictures, click, 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 windows, from point A to point B. And these pictures, you might say they're film with full spectroscopic film, not just color, you know, but it gamma rays, X-rays, gamma rays come from black holes, X-rays, different energy fields, gravity waves. You know, they have a whole thing with called element 115 where they use gravity waves. So all this registered on a film. So then what they did is they had a map, one light year long map, of where point A, origination, and point B would look like on film. Okay? So what they do is they take this ship out into space, you know, and they get ready to go across. They don't just punch out of the, you know, they don't take off from the ground and go into hyperspace drive for several reasons. They use the anti-gravity drive, which is in here. This ring is the anti-gravity section here. What it has in it, it has, you know, how about trace minerals? You know, we talk about trace minerals? It has colloidal minerals in it, similar, not to what we drink, but similar, because they represent, you know, minerals are consciousness, in case you don't know it. Minerals are consciousness.
There's also a lot of rare earth in there.
Yeah, rare earth. Yeah, neodymium, that's what they are, yeah. And you in your bodies, all your bodies in here, okay? You know, you guys have magnetic fields, magnetic auras, but you don't have any polarity to them, okay? The reason you don't have any polarity to them is because you're operating what's called the Seebeck effect. The Seebeck effect is a non-polarized magnetic field. That's what humans are. That's what this ship is. And so what happens is these fluids are accelerating in two different directions, and there's like toroids that starts pinching these things, and when it pinches them, the gravity goes away. The gravity goes away. They pinch it out. It doesn't see the Earth. And it's thrown off the Earth by centrifugal force. If it's a moon, like the moon, it'll lift off because there's no rotation on the moon. That's how it gets off the ground. It gets out into space. Now what it does is it takes a picture of where it is. You know, that's what this gather lens does. There's a one on the top and one on the bottom on this model. Now some of the ships do it all on the top. You know, you guys have seen that ship, that big thing on the top? Billy Meyer took some pictures of it. It's been in. That one is the one that does it all in one deal. This is the earlier models. Okay, so this gathers the energy, and then it sends it down through what's called a cancel column. I use it in my time travel machine, too, the cancel column. The cancel column, what they are, they're a combination of a linear accelerator, is the only way I could describe it, a laser that can't escape, and a caduceus coil type thing, which collapses everything. So everything is drawn down in the center. When it gets down into the center, that X1 healing machine that you saw over here on the side is sitting there. Now, what's in the X1 healing machine? Well, now, if we can cause your body to heal itself in less than a second, and your body is a perfect expression of the universe and the galaxy and creation, then why can't we just take that healing machine and program it to create any coordinate, you know, in space and time that we want to go to in the universe, right? That's exactly what the X1 does. It bolts onto this thing right here and becomes the input. So now what we do, we've taken a picture of where we are in space and time, like say we're hovering 300 or 400 miles off on the Earth. We take that picture. We have a picture inside of where we want to be, a couple hundred light years away. And so we start feeding that image into this chamber and reintroducing it out. And now rather than gathering, this whole intelligence here starts to transmit the picture. So basically what we've done is we've taken a picture of where we are and transmit it into it a picture of where we want to be and mix it in the ship. And when the mixing is done, we're there. That's how this stuff works. That's how Pleiadian technology works, okay, on these ships. Optics coming from... Get out of the way. See these things right here? These are... You'll see on the side of these ships, you'll see... Don't confuse the cabins sitting up here, but you'll see on a Pleiadian ship, if you ever see pictures of them, you'll see these little things lighting up around the edges. In some of Billy's footage where it goes around like this, you see this light start to blink and it moves. This is called the spider optic network. What the spider optic network does is it transmits scalar waves, raw scalar waves, right out the side of the ship. And this allows it to make small incremental jumps. It's not moving like an airplane. It's not moving like an airplane with wings supported by pressure of the atmosphere. It's literally materializing, dematerializing, you know, bang, 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 in little incremental steps, millionths of a second, and moving around while still maintaining visibility to an observer on the ground, unless you're one of these, you know, how you've probably heard how they, some people can see them and some can't. Some people standing over here can't see them, and the people here, what they do is they take this gather optics and scale the time waves down so that light passes right through it at certain sides of the ship so somebody can see it and somebody can't. Okay? That's the technology that makes all that possible. So you understand how it works. Overview. That's in my book, too. That's some of the close-up stuff. Huh? Yeah, right. You guys are going to have that. That was what the time machine looked like. That's just a little model of it. The big one is in the book. That was the big one when we were constructing it, a piece of the section, one of the sections of it. It was huge. Now, this is what the time machine will look like, the newest one that I built, when it's finished. That's all explained in the book, too. That's in flight. It flies. The reason, by the way, that we fly a time machine, it's not a spaceship. That's what happened to it. The reason we fly one of those is... This isn't made to go into space. It does have an electrogravity system in it. And I explain all of how it works. I'm not going to do it now, but it's well explained in the book. And it has a little landing gear. The reason we have to move this thing is because when you go backwards, if you're sitting at a certain point, the geography changes. And then when you arrive at your destination, it could tip over, or it could be inside of a mountain, you know, depending on where the terrain is. So you have these kinds of problems with time travel.
Is that how they got those artifacts buried in the rocks?
Huh? Is it sticking? Yeah. No, I don't know how that happened. I never asked that question. This stupid thing is no sticking. Right? Yeah. Fix it here. There it goes. It's way to go. Oh, good. Okay, so then they started to tell me to take pictures, you know? So I start taking pictures. This is a phase I'm just getting into, is picture taking, because I didn't even know how to operate a camera. But this is down at Newport Beach, and Sannyasi says, this is the moon right here. She says, aim the damn camera at the moon, take a picture. And I did, and this little telemetry ship showed up on the film. It's a little tiny 3-foot ship just between me and a pine tree. See the little thing there? It's got a little ridge to it. And there, these little ships are about that big. And that thing was hovering right next to me. I didn't know it until I took the picture. Next was an Andromeda ship. This is down in Laguna, and in a hill, there's the ocean in the background. This was an Andromeda contact. This is the time I ran out of film, but here comes the ship right here with a real high dome on it. And they kept coming in closer. And I got one more picture of it before I screwed that up, as it came up really nice right there. And then when it came up closer, I ran out of film. No excuses, but I'll do more pictures later, you know.
I got a strange question.
Yeah.
Would you say the person who could see these ships, would they be better off or worse off than other people by comparison?
Okay, good question, because we can go right into that now. This makes it more interesting for everybody. Let me show you what seeing one of those is and how this works. Okay. Right there. Let me get that pen back there. I'm going to draw how the human aura works real quick for you. Remember, okay, we're right back. Okay, minerals, enzymes, okay, body chain, vitamins. Does everybody remember this from the lecture? Okay, vitamins. This is a chain here I'm drawing of how our bodies work. Okay, protein. Peptides, Okay, then hormones. Okay? A hormone is the first unit of biochemistry to possess consciousness. Okay? So we go from minerals to enzymes to vitamins, protein to peptides to hormones. These hormones are stored in 7 endocrine glands in the body. Okay? The endocrine gland is a capillary. It wants to release the hormone, but it can't until it gets a sound, a vibration, a feeling. Okay? And the feeling, the feelings come into the endocrine glands through what are called chakras, or a vagus nerve, or 10th cranial nerve, psychic area of the body. So this senses stellar energy, for example. We sense the stars. We sense the stars more. It causes the hormones to go in the bloodstream, more so now than it did 100 years ago because of where we are in consciousness. The full moon, new moon, moon cycles. All our systems work with moon cycles. During the full moon, when the tides are moving around, your skin is real tight. Your surface tension is real tight. Your system has trouble working. And then during the new moon, your surface tension changes and you relax. That's why your attitude, everything in your whole body changes, new moon to full moon. Sounds, all these different things, laser lights, lights, gemstones like we use in the receptors, all of these stimulate endocrine function. The endocrine gland comes out, goes into your bloodstream, goes up to your brain. When it gets up to your brain is full of electrolytes, which I was mentioning earlier. Electrolytes are only present in people that take photines and zinc, glucose, those kinds of things in their body, trace minerals. People that breathe a lot of automobile exhaust, which is a great inhibitor of electrolytes, they'll have a tendency to have a lower electrolyte level. People that have high electrolyte levels will not be susceptible to any kind of damage from radiation. People from low levels of electrolytes in their body will be destroyed by radiation. They'll have cancers and all kinds of things. Okay, it's a whole science here. So the bottom line is the electrolytes are here. If this were your battery in your car, I'd put a positive terminal, negative terminal here and start your motor. Okay, it's the same thing. It's a source of electricity. The brain is full of electricity. So now in these electrolytes are two types of switches. Okay, one is called the receptor. So when a hormone gets there, it turns it on, sending an electrical signal out of the brain. Or the other one is called an effector, which is already sending signals out of the brain. And when the hormone gets there, it turns it off. Okay? So you got one switch, it's normally on, one switch is normally off. Okay?